What's the biggest threat to organizations today? It's not failure, it's stagnation. In this episode, we dive into stories of bold transformation when organizations didn't settle for tweaks, but reimagined everything, how they work, how they lead, and how they think. These are real stories of tension, resistance, courage, and growth. Moments when change became a shared journey, not a task. We'll highlight what really makes change stick, the pattern that often go unnoticed but make all the difference. If you are leading change or thinking about it, this episode will shift your perspective. Welcome to Change That Works, a podcast by ICG about change, leadership and innovation that takes you behind the scenes. Today's host will be Pécely György. Welcome to our new episode. My guest is István Kosztolányi, Kosti. He is organization development expert for 30 years. His mission is to help developing human workplaces. Change is good if it supports reaching the business goals of the organization. This is also his motto. Hello, Kosti. Welcome to our podcast.
Hello, Gyuri.
We discussed that we are going to talk about real change stories. So what would be the first topic that you have for us?
The first story is a major shift in the sales department of a big company. It's a production company with wholesale and retail sales units. And a deep restructuring was planned in the sales field, which meant that from the 120 sales team members, only 50 could stay eventually. So about 70 salespeople had to be dismissed during this change. But still, the same sales results were expected from the remaining 50. Of course, in a different structure, and some competencies have been moved to other units. And you know, salespeople are energetic, they are extroverts, they are loud, they stand up for themselves. So during this change, we also expected that they will behave alike. With the sales manager, we had a 2-year cooperation history already. There was a strong trust between us. When I say us, it was him and his deputy and two of us, two consultants, external consultants. And we had experience working together in workshops, in coaching situations. Also, we had good personal relations. And there was a 2-day workshop planned to introduce this decision, this change process, and also find out potential solutions for this.
Wow, the change seems to be quite challenging, like reducing the number so much and still expecting the same results. It sounds quite ambitious for me. And I can imagine that people got quite frustrated hearing these ideas. So how did you prepare to work on this resistance?
This whole story was kept in secret. You can imagine if people started to talk about this on the corridors, in the smoking area and places like that, the change would be very chaotic.
Would you really keep it in secret?
Yes, it was. It wasn't up to us, externals, but this decision came from the board, from high above in the organization, and the whole information chain kept this secret, kept this plan undercover.
And do you think it was an important aspect of the success of the change, or I hope it will be success at the end?
Yes, it was an important aspect. I will explain why. We had a really long and deep preparation with the sales manager, how to drive this change. This also included that we were working out together what would be the main message, the key message of this change when he introduces this whole plan. And we also discussed how long his presentation should be, and we agreed that not more than 3 slides. Since when he explains that, hey, look, 70 colleagues will have to leave, you can imagine that people will not listen to the presentation anymore. We even recorded his presentation on a video as a rehearsal, and we watched it, and then he changed it. And we also went to the management team. And he explained to the management team members how he will introduce this change. He received feedback from his colleagues, top management colleagues. And then the days came, these 2 days workshop came, and the location was a hotel with a large farm type of surrounding. huge outdoor spaces in the countryside in Hungary. And it was a coincidence, but there was no mobile network at that place.
Mm-hmm.
This will be interesting in the future, in the next day, the second day especially.
It seems to be quite a huge investment for me to support this change. And I wonder that we can hear many companies who would do this change a bit more simple ways, I would say, like just announcing that 70 people have to leave the company and that's all, and probably from next day giving people new tasks. So why did it make sense to invest so much time and effort to prepare this change? What was the reason behind it?
At least two important reasons. One was that it was clear that when people hear this change, everyone will know about this change on the market. And the best sales guys and ladies will be hunted by the competitors. And they wanted to avoid this. They wanted to keep the best people, best sales colleagues in the team. And also the second reason was that they had to keep the level of sales. So if there is a sudden change, a chaotic change, it was quite possible that the level of sales will drop. And the revenue, the volume of their sales in terms of financial revenue, it's huge. So even a small drop would mean big losses for the company.
Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that at the beginning or before the whole change, there was quite a thorough discussion about mm-hmm. what kind of effects the change might have at the end. Mm-hmm.
Yes, there was a detailed plan for the new structure and the new operation.
Mm-hmm. And I'm quite curious what happened on the first day. So you said that you went to a farm and the announcement happened there. And I can imagine that emotions went high. So how was it going?
So we were sitting in a large room with this 120 people and the sales management. And the sales guys were sitting at tables, small groups of 7-8 people at one table. And we had a short warm-up, not too long, because everyone was expecting what would happen. They knew that something is mm-hmm. in the air. Something is coming in the pipeline. And before the sales manager had his presentation, we explained with my colleague in details what will be the next steps after the presentation. And we did this on purpose, and we repeated it twice, because we knew that after the presentation, no one will listen to us, or only a few of them. So we explained very simple rules. When the presentation is over, then the whole morning is for free discussion. They can use the whole outdoor space, the huge farm. They can walk, they can sit down at benches, they can stay in the room if they wish. We propose that they come for lunch at 1 o'clock, and after lunch, everyone should come back to this room to continue our discussion. So the manager did his presentation, the whole room blew up, lots of anger, strong emotions, shouting. Some people were scared, what will happen now? And yes, as we guessed, we couldn't give them any instructions anymore. Some people stayed in the room, some people, actually most of them, went outside. And as I said, there was no mobile network, but it was really a coincidence. So people could not make telephone calls back to the organization and to relatives and so on. In some sense, this was helpful. In some sense, this wasn't helpful. Anyhow, as we observed, that most people came for lunch. And I would say 99% of the people came back after lunch to the room. And I don't go into the details. We had a short structured preparation for a Q&A session. And they collected all kinds of questions. Technical questions, human resource questions, and so on, legal questions as well. When we told them that for the second day, we invited colleagues from HR, colleagues from external providers who are engaged in outplacement, colleagues from the legal department, if there are some legal questions about contracts and so on. So the next day, these experts will be there.
But for me, that sounds like the people could still continue working with the leadership team, right? In a way, of course, because I could imagine that after such an announcement, the reputation of the leadership team might change drastically. And I could also think that some people would say that it's quite difficult for me to believe you or believe what you say in the future, because what you are putting out here is so extreme and so unexpected. So how could you keep this atmosphere of people being able to work together?
One element was that in his presentation, he very clearly expressed not only the technical background of this change, but also his emotions. The sales manager, he himself was also a salesperson, started from not from the bottom of the organization, but from lower levels of the organization, and then he became the sales manager. So he could relate to this whole thing emotionally, and this was also part of his presentation, which was about 4 or 5 minutes. And he clearly explained the technical background, the process of decision-making in this. And he very clearly stated that he trusts his colleagues that this can be solved together, and also that he believes that we can solve this only together. And also another element was that there was a very high level of trust between the sales management team and the sales teams. So there was a good basis for this. And the second element was that people could talk about this, that the morning was partially for ventilating emotions, collecting some ideas. So we asked the management, the sales management team, that they should not engage in discussions with colleagues only if they are asked a question or they are asked to join a small team. So don't campaign about this during the morning. Just be available, also walk in the farmyard, but let them discuss. So when they came back after lunch, of course, there were some questions which clearly showed that people are angry, people are upset, frustrated. And the sales management team was very calm. They were also prepared to stay calm. Of course, they were emotionally moved as well, but they had to show some stability.
How much did they take responsibility for this change? Was it like, yes, I'm for this change, I take responsibility for that? Or were they rather saying that this change is coming from up, from the top management, and we just have to operatively complete it or do it? So how was their approach?
The first one, and this was also a process for them. Their first reaction was when they heard, sorry, they are stupid upstairs. but when they stood in front of their colleagues, they were very firm on that they really believe in this change. They need to do the change and they will drive the change, whatever it brings. And when he did his presentation, he also explained that this change, that about 50 people should deliver what 120 was delivering so far. He believes in this and he's ready to support them by all means. And these kinds of questions also came up in the questions and answers session. And at some point, we started to collect topics for the second day, like in a parking lot, that, okay, so there is this question about future contracts. We cannot answer these now, but tomorrow, actually, they arrived in the evening, so they were also with us for the dinner. So we had a long list of questions, so they could also prepare in the evening and in the morning with answers for the questions. So there were some coming and going during the afternoon, but people started to turn into some collaborative mode because they understood that this is a given, that they could fight, but there is no point fighting. We, as external consultants, we were just facilitating, moderating, keeping the discussion in a flow. We didn't use any change models. We didn't present any wise suggestions to them. Just, yeah, keeping the flow of the discussion.
But I guess when you created this process, you had many change principles in mind.
Yes, and actually we used these change principles. However, we used them when we commented on the style of some people who asked questions. For example, you know, a question should be short and should be a real question, not that you explain your standpoint and then you ask that, and what do you think about this? This is not a real question, it's a statement. And so we were using these models or our expertise in this way.
Yes, and how was the second day going on? So what happened during that one? Because I can imagine that it was a long night, I would say, to process the information and process the emotions. But how did it channel in the second day?
We started with a team building exercise, which was modeling understanding. So it was about communication in large groups and how we can listen to each other and how we can support. I mean, the participants, how they can support understanding and how they can listen to each other. And also the setup of the room was different in a way that, you know, the coffee break stuff like coffee, tea, refreshments were not on a separate table, but they were put on the tables. So it made it comfortable for them, cozy.
So the whole environment was actually carefully planned to support this kind of communication and cooperation.
There were some working groups set up with the help of the experts, like legal, HR, outplacement experts. We created some groups of questions or topics. And we, like in a World Cafe setting, but not in that structure, but in a similar setting, that there was a table which could discuss employment contract issues. There were tables where they could discuss what will happen to my team members. There were tables where they could discuss, okay, so how do I hand over my responsibilities?
Did they communicate the names? So who is going to stay and who is...
No, but obviously for some people it was clear that they will have to leave. For some people it was a question mark, you know, in the middle. And for some people it was clear that, you know, I'm one of the best salespersons in this company, so I should stay or I will find another position for myself quite easily somewhere else. And there were some tables which was very important, which were discussing the selection criteria. So what should be the competencies of those sales colleagues who stay and who have to deliver the same volume of results than the 120? And as I said, some processes and functions were moved from the sales unit to other units, but still it was a different workload. Different type of competencies were needed. And when we discussed this, this discussion was going on the whole morning practically. People were moving quite freely between tables. We were coordinating them. We made sure that they made notes. They made clear notes at the tables. And we had a long break during the morning where we again looked at the flip charts and with the notes. So those who were there to support the process, they could get ready for their answers. Mm-hmm. So in the morning, mostly collecting questions, collecting ideas. And it was interesting that most of the comments were, even if not positive, but constructive. Mm-hmm. So questions were focusing on potential solutions or potential risks. Only a few comments on flip charts that, hey, this whole change is stupid. We cannot do this. Really minor comments like this. And then in the afternoon, these experts explained their answers or concepts. They explained how they support those who will need to find a new employment very soon, what this means, how they can get ready. And again, when the experts finished their answers, they went into separate rooms and people could join them, ask questions. Practically by mid-afternoon of the second day, for most of the people, it was clear that, okay, I have to move either outside of the organization or inside the organization, or I'm a question mark, or I will stay.
Mm-hmm. So it was not decided by then, by the leaders?
No, no names.
But it kind of started to form. So people started to realize that what their role would be in this change.
Mm-hmm. Of course, between themselves, they started to say that, hey, Yuri, you will stay and I most possibly I will have to leave. But no names, no lists were created. And this was also very important because there were these questions that, hey, do you have the list of names already? This was one of the first questions.
Yes.
And they said, no, we have no list of names. And they were very firm on this. And all members of the sales management team, they had this very strong opinion because actually they didn't have a list.
Uh-huh. So it was not a...
No. They very much believed in it, that if they want to keep the best people, they have to do it together with them.
At the end, it was mostly the team deciding who is going to stay and who is going to leave.
In some sense, yes. Of course, there were official process of management decision based on this criteria, which was really transparent. Mm-hmm. There were many steps of this decision making. And what is interesting, or a big success, at least based on their judgment, I mean, the management judgment was that no legal cases were started during this process, the whole process. So no labor regulations cases, nothing. So everything went smoothly. Of course, there were people who were offended, some people who were deeply frustrated. And then the deadline for this process was the end of the year. We had this workshop sometime in spring. And by the end of the year, everyone was in his or her new position. And who had to leave, they left. They left in peace. And again, there were some people angry, but that was really the minority.
So it sounds quite successful at the end, despite it's still a very difficult story because people had to change or lose their jobs. But at the end, it seems to be quite successful. And what kind of success factors or models you would see behind this process? So what was the key principles you could keep during the whole change that really helped it to be successful at the end?
Very much depended on the sales manager. He could stay stable during the whole process, not only the workshop, but also before and after the workshop. He could stay stable.
You mean stable emotionally, so not losing his temper, staying calm like that? Okay.
Yeah, this is what I wanted to say, that he expressed his emotions. He expressed authentic sadness. And of course, we use models, and one of the models which was in the background of this was developed by our Finnish colleagues in Notiimi. And this model in a simplified form shows that when there is a change or when you want to share any kind of information with people, you can simply tell them, you can announce the change. You can explain the rationales, they will hear it, but no real change will happen. They might understand it, but not necessarily. A next level could be that you open it up for discussion, so deepen the understanding, find some ways how they can contribute so they can feel that their hands are also in the solution. And then the third level or third approach is that they do it together. So there is this situation that you are 120 now and around 50 can stay. How shall we do this?
It's very powerful in this story that those people who were not part of the end result were also co-creating this change and making it successful, which is, I think, quite often a fear among decision makers that if those people who are not part of the end result will contribute, then they would probably drive it not the best direction.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you for this story. I think it was really powerful and strong, and it's good that we could go into deep discussions about that. And it's good to understand the model behind it. But you said that you would have another story, which is probably not that difficult in the same way, but still holds a lot of challenge or had a lot of challenge when it was happening.
Yes, it's a different setting. It's a machinery manufacturing company, and they manufacture heavy machinery. So their products are really heavy in terms of weight. Huge pieces of metal.
So literally heavy.
This means that the operators had to walk a lot during a shift. And they were complaining that we have to walk a lot and we get very tired by the end of the shift. This is not good for our health. And all kinds of complaints came from the operators. Again, with very strong emotions sometimes that the company doesn't care about us. The company doesn't care about our health. So there were strong emotions in these complaints as well. And as a result, some sort of working group was set up by the engineering unit, but in secrecy. So not involving others into the solution.
Did they take those complaints seriously? Because it sounds for me that these were a bit more than complaints, like facts. If they have to walk so much and it's really exhausting people, and I can imagine that for older people it could be really difficult to do that. So the question is, how seriously did they, I mean the leadership, the management, took these complaints if they started a working group in secrecy, or what was the reason behind?
The secrecy means here that they did not announce that they start to work on this. Mm-hmm. And then the engineers were doing measurements, they analyzed data, they calculated things, and they worked out a new layout for the shop floor, this part mm-hmm. of the shop floor. And very often during weekends, there was no production in this part of the factory, so in this specific shop. And during one weekend, with the help of the maintenance team, the shop floor was rearranged.
Surprise, surprise.
Yes. And although there were some rumors already going around on the shop floor, because of course the maintenance guys were asked to come in during the weekend. So also the operators and everyone was suspecting that something will happen. And on Monday morning, when the operators, team leaders and shift leaders came in, they have found the new setup, the new layout of the shop floor, and they were lost. They didn't understand what happened. Some people thought that it was against them. Some thought that this was for productivity reasons. And of course, then there was a town hall-like of meeting on the shop floor where engineers explained using slides what is behind this change and so on. And the basic reaction from operators was very simplifying, of course, but it was like, I do not find my tools. They used to be here. Where are they now?
I can't work here in this environment, in other words, I can imagine.
Yes, and the output dropped. The atmosphere was very bad. Team leaders on the shop floor had real difficulties to motivate.
Did they start finger pointing? Like, I can imagine in this situation that everybody could look at the other, like, it's not my fault that the results are not coming.
Yes, surely. Some shift leaders or some people in the production management, let's say, they knew about this plan. Not the details, but the whole plan. And they were accused that they did not involve others, that they used only their ideas. And they really had a hard time to explain that these were not their ideas. They just indicated that there were some problems, there were some issues. Anyhow, it was clear that this whole new way of working at the shop floor cannot be continued. Operators started to move their stuff. I mean, some of the tools, some of the gauges, measurement tools with them. And then came another type of solution. Production manager initiated a new working team where they involved operators, production team leaders, some engineers, some people from the maintenance team, some people who were engaged in health and safety, and worked out another layout. They created these cardboard silhouette models of the machines, and they were moving them around and checking how it looks like in this cardboard factory. And then it seemed that the operators were satisfied, also the team leaders, and then they rearranged again and they had a new layout.
And how were you involved in this change process?
It's very simple. We had some discussions with the production management. So like, we were like in a consulting mode, I mean, a classic consulting mode. We didn't facilitate any of the sessions. We just gave some ideas about the process. So like, let's say an external expert in change, were we involved?
But I guess for the second trial, not the first. So it's probably not a bad idea to ask for some short advice when someone is planning such a big change. And how was the results at the end after this change?
Operators were happy and they had to work much, much less. Also, the atmosphere and the satisfaction level of the operators was much higher. Less complaints were coming from the shop floor, and also some metrics of the production also improved.
And what kind of change in mindset you observed, especially in the engineering department? Because I have experiences that engineering department says that, hey, I did all the university studies and I have all the high degrees to do all these calculations, and that's why it's my task and my duty to do this kind of rearrangements. But quite often we find that if operators with much fewer degrees are involved, the results will be much better. And I think it's a very important learning for engineers quite often, at least in my experience. Did you observe something interesting in this respect?
Yes. This classic, as you described, that engineers believe that they need to make calculations, they need to take measurements, and then figure it out, engineer it out, what is the solution. And what they forgot was this one aspect of, for example, lean management, that when you start to employ an operator, you do not only buy the two hands, but you also buy his or her brain. And the operators, they are at the shop floor, they work, they know everything about the machines, they know everything about the processes, much more than engineers do. So this whole concept was lost for engineering. And then they realized that, hey, operators really see what happens on the shop floor when we had the second or they had the second round.
Mm. Sounds great. And as a closing question, I would like to ask you that what kind of similarities and commonalities you see in these two stories and that you would like to highlight as final learnings for our listeners?
One is definitely what we very often explain during workshops and trainings, that in these cases, an organization does not really exist because there is a factory building, there is a sales department, but it exists because there are people, there are human beings who operate the factory, who do the sales. And during the changes, the process should focus on the human element very much. Of course, the technical elements as well, and the results are expected from the change. And the management should focus on this and they should be involved. So both sides need to be involved, not only those who are affected by the change directly, but also the management should stand behind. It's not enough if only the management says that, hey, you need to change. The management should stand in the middle of the change, involving people. Also sharing their own emotions. By this, I mean that the manager's leader should also show if they are happy, show if they are upset during the change process. So they should be authentic in this.
So staying authentic. And yeah, thank you very much. And for me, I think I've learned a lot in this discussion and a lot of inspiration. But what I would highlight is that before the change start, think through the process and think about the possible consequences and interrelationships and plan it carefully ahead would be my key takeaway from this discussion, besides many others. Kosti, thank you very much for sharing your stories. And thank you for the listeners too. We will see you again in the next episode. Goodbye. Yes. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Change That Work seeks to inspire a different way to transform organizations. Let's tune in again for our next episode.